I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome back to Radio Times. The Philadelphia mayoral election is less than 2 weeks away. There are five candidates vying for the job, including our guest, Republican Melissa Murray Bailey. This is her first run for public office. She grew up in New Jersey and moved to Philadelphia with her family 3 years ago in 2012 and is an executive at Universum. That's a Swedish firm that describes itself as a global leader in employer branding. This time last year, Melissa Murray Bailey was a Democrat and switched parties to run for mayor. She does have an uphill fight. Philadelphia hasn't had a Republican mayor since the 1950s and has never had a woman as mayor either. She is our guest on Radio Times today, part of our series of one-on-one interviews with Philadelphia mayoral candidates. And Melissa Murray Bailey, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Why did you want to run as a Republican?
When I decided to run for mayor, that's the first time, you know, in your life you really need to look inside and decide, am I a Republican or a Democrat? I was a Democrat my whole life because that's what my family was. My parents are both teachers. They're very involved in their unions. And, you know, as such, they were Democrats. And I've always been pretty moderate, you know, a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left on different issues. And you can vote either way. It doesn't matter what your party is. But when you decide to run for office, that's when you really need to look inside yourself and say which party's philosophies most resonate with my moral compass. And that's how I ended up deciding to change my party to be a Republican, because as I looked at the Democrats in the city and what the Democrats stood for, it wasn't who I am. You know, the corruption, the indictments that have been happening, that is not at all representative of myself. And as we look at, you know, how we have been fiscally irresponsible with the taxpayers' monies, my conservative views on financial policy are very relevant when it comes to governing the city.
And are you a Republican or a conservative because of fiscal matters from a financial point of view?
Yes, I'm very fiscally conservative. And when I looked and researched, you know, what the true beliefs and the values of the Republican Party are and what they're founded on, they were founded to be the voice for the little guy, the voice for people who didn't have a voice. And it was Republicans who really led the charge for making sure we had anti-discrimination and giving the women the right to vote and the Voting Rights Act. So they're all things that are the whole reason that I'm running. I'm running because we have a political class of elite that make decisions for the city. And the little guy, the regular person, their voice has been lost. And I want to stand up and be a voice for them in the city.
Do you think in your descriptions of the Republican Party, some of their activism in the past, do you think that still describes the Republican Party today as you look even beyond Philadelphia, for instance, who's running for president?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as you look at Republicans, you know, Republican politicians are coming up more from the grassroots level. And that's why I think you see so many different types of Republicans. But I think they hold the same things true. And, you know, depending whether you're in the Northeast or you're in an urban environment, I think those things are a little bit different.
You talked about deciding to run for mayor. Was there a pivotal moment? I mean, was there a moment where you thought, I'm going to run for mayor of Philadelphia?
Yes, there was a very specific day that really came into my mind. You know, as you mentioned, I moved to Philadelphia pretty recently, and I grew up in South Jersey. And when you're growing up in South Jersey, on the dirt road that I grew up on, you look to Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is the place you get to go when you make it. And so after living all around the world, when my husband and I had our daughter, we said, you know, it's time for us to settle down. Where is that going to be? And there was no doubt in my mind that that would be Philadelphia. But when we came here, we saw that, you know, there's two different stories of Philadelphia. It's the Philadelphia that is booming and is center city and where, you know, a small portion of the city and the citizens really get to thrive. And then there's the abject poverty that we have. We have the communities that have been really forgotten. And that didn't sit well with me. And so as we started to heat up for this mayoral election, I really thought that we needed somebody who was willing to speak up for the little guy, to challenge the status quo, and to bring ideas that really needed to be talked about. Because when things are worse every year for the majority of our citizens, we have to do something different.
Well, let me ask you about the fact that you're, I mean, a relative newcomer to this city. As you said, you've lived here for 3 years, new to the Republican Party, and you've never run for elective office before. And here you are running for mayor of, you know, one of the largest cities in the country. Where do you get your credentials to do that?
Yeah, well, a great mayor needs to be a great leader. And as we look, you know, across government as where we've seen successful people, you know, when we look at some of our best presidents, they've come from being governors before they're president. Not necessarily from the legislature. And so when we look at what the city needs, we need someone who is a leader, someone who is going to set a vision for where we need to go and be able to galvanize people around them so that we can get accomplished what we set out. Now, my leadership experience, my leadership credentials are exhaustive. That is, you know, what I do for a living. I lead organizations, I build them, I turn them around. And as part of that, I have to work with boards of directors. I need to work with shareholders, which is a lot like what you need to do as mayor.
What do you make of the criticism that not only have you never held public office before, but also don't have a strong connection to the civic life of the city? There are many nonprofit organizations and the arts and across the city, and the rap being that you're not connected with that either.
Well, I would disagree with that at this point. Maybe if you said that to me a year ago, that would be a fair analysis. But I've spent the last year listening to them, meeting with them, talking with them. And the one thing that comes across very clearly is they have great ideas and they're doing really good things for the city, but they haven't been able to partner effectively with City Hall, and they're very frustrated with that. So despite the connections that people may have in the past, we haven't been successful in leveraging and harnessing all the great things that those groups are doing.
You talk about leadership qualities, and no argument from me about that. I mean, clearly every city, including this city, needs strong leadership. What do you see as those qualities that you have that could lead a city like Philadelphia?
Yeah, so I've proven to be able to set direction, to be able to take all the different ideas that people have and make decisive decisions on that and then set a path forward. So I did that when I was running the business in Asia. I've done that.
And this is for Universum?
No, I was in Asia for a company called the Corporate Executive Board.
Okay.
And then now for Universum. And so one of the key things is being able to collaborate with people. And that is something that I don't think anyone would argue is missing in almost all of our governments, even at the highest level. But as a leader, I'm extremely collaborative. I seek out others who have expertise, who have opinions, who have new ways of doing things. And I bring all of that together to get us to the best answer. It's not about who wins and who loses. We all need to remember that if elected, we're in service to the people, and we need to do everything we can to deliver to them the best results.
How do you see the relationship between the mayor of Philadelphia and city council?
Yeah.
How do you see that relationship?
I mean, it's been strained. That's no secret. There's been a lot of challenges with the mayor and with city council. And I've talked to several city council members about it. And I've talked to the mayor about it as well. And, you know, what we need to do is we need to engage people in the process earlier. You know, we see
meeting city council.
Meeting city council. So sitting down, I mean, the city council members have been in office for a really long time. They have experiences that, of course, I can learn from and, of course, are going to play a big role into the vision and the strategy we set forward. So I'm not going to come in and say, here's my strategy, take it or leave it. We're going to have several meetings in advance so we can collaborate and come to a strategy that we can all get in line with and move forward together. But the challenge right now is there's no clear-cut path that the city is on. So you have city council, you have the nonprofits you spoke of, you have the business community, you have the people who don't know where we're going. So it's very hard for them to help us along the way.
Where is Philadelphia going from your perspective?
I think it is not going in a direction that we can be happy with. I think we need to be woken up and turn it around. I mean, there are some hard realities. You know, we boast about all of the wonderful lists that we're at the top of. Well, when you look at all of those lists, there are things that make us a great place to visit. But when you look at the lists we're the bottom of, it's no wonder we have trouble attracting people to want to come here and middle-class families fleeing out.
You're talking about taxes. You're talking about the wage tax, poverty.
I'm talking about poverty, education, and jobs. We have, you know, almost 30% of the people in our city living in poverty. Many of them are in deep poverty. We only have 65% of our kids graduating from high school. And we have less jobs now in the city than we did 30 years ago. And that is not a national trend. Boston, Chicago, D.C., they all have all seen double-digit job growth in the same time that we have job decrease. So we need to stop this if we're going to be able to move our city forward.
We're almost up on our first break here, about a minute or so, taking the issue of poverty. And we'll finish after the break. How do you suggest addressing poverty in the city? And it is. It's really a crime in many ways, not an actual crime, but just the fact that so many people in the city live below the poverty line.
Yeah, we need more jobs in the city for the people who need jobs in the city. So I want us to continue to focus on things like eds and meds and white-collar jobs, but that's not what's going to get people out of poverty in our city. Now, the majority of people who are living in poverty have a high school education or less. So what we need to do is we need to look at companies and industries that we can attract into Philadelphia that can get those people working. Because as I've been talking with them, they are dying to be connected to an opportunity for work. And that needs to be our most important priority.
Are you talking about service work?
Service work, call center work, manufacturing opportunities. So there's, you know, many different industries that we need to deliberately attract and industries that will do training. So a great thing, you know, with Saxby's Coffee coming in, they will hire, you know, 1,000 workers and train them all. That's the type of thing we need to be very aggressive with attracting to our city.
And that is Melissa Murray Bailey. She is running for mayor of Philadelphia as a Republican. And this is the fourth of five interviews we've been doing with all the mayoral candidates in this city. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499 to ask our guest a question. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. Much more after the short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, and we are continuing our series of one-on-one interviews with the candidates for mayor of Philadelphia. And again, our guest is Republican candidate Melissa Murray Bailey. She's 36 years old. She works as an executive for a Swedish company called Universum, and she does believe that some of her business experience, her business acumen, can help fix Philadelphia's financial woes and other woes as well. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You talked about bringing in jobs, and I think, you know, every candidate, every mayor has talked about doing that. But how do you bring in jobs that would pay more than just above the minimum wage, which oftentimes service jobs are that? Where people really need to have a living wage, more like $15 an hour, in order to be able to support a family. Do you support that idea?
So I mentioned right before the break about call centers, and people have probably heard me talk about that before. The reason I've focused on that industry is because of a couple of things that you mentioned. First, there is a big wave right now of onshoring call center jobs. 50,000 jobs were created in the U.S. in 2014 in call centers.
So people aren't calling India anymore.
Exactly. People want to be able to call into the U.S. And the second thing is, like you mentioned about wages, the average starting salary for a call center job is actually $45,000 a year, which is a fair wage that, you know, many people in the city would love to have to support their family. And thirdly, they provide training. And so all three things make it a great opportunity to attract to Philadelphia.
So how do you get call centers to headquarter or open business here in the city?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
So we first start talking to them. And the great thing about attracting that type of company to the city is they are more likely to hire our people. When we look at other types of industries of bringing into the city, they might bring a lot of their employees with them, which obviously we want more people. But my first priority is getting the people in Philadelphia working. So, you know, in with my business background, I've been in B2B.
Business to business
for, you know, my whole career. So I know how to talk to the executives who are making those decisions. I have actually helped to advise many executives as they've been deciding what city they're going to locate in. So I know what are the things that they're going to consider, and I've built that into a lot of my plans.
What about the way businesses are taxed in the city? Is that an impediment to getting business to headquarter or even to stay here?
It is a long-term impediment, which is why, you know, my tax plan really talks about simplifying the tax structure, because we know the taxes are high. But also one of the challenges is for people outside of Philadelphia, for them to even understand what their tax liability is very, very difficult. So it gets Philadelphia struck off the list almost immediately. So what we need to do is we need to simplify the tax code. And then we also need to start to realign it. And with that, that means for the people reducing tax liability as well. And that's with the wage tax. You know, the wage tax hurts the middle class and the lower income communities more than anyone else in the city.
The city, though, depends on taxes. I mean, whether they're onerous, whether they're complicated enough, that's really the major source of money for the city. So if you're going to change the taxes or reduce the taxes, how do you either make up the money or where do you make the cuts?
Yeah, so there are two ways to lead and to think about things. One is through constriction, which has been our approach in the city, and the other is through growth. So we have been increasing taxes on a reducing tax base. But that is not a plan that's going to work for the future. We need to focus on growth. And as we grow and focus on growth, and we might have to have some incentives along the way for that to happen, but then we'll be able to pull back taxes because we'll have an increasing tax base. And so it's a different way of thinking about it. But in the interim, we'll do a couple of things. We'll look at the land value tax versus the structure tax. Right now, the way it's set up is a lot of the value is in the structure.
Mm-hmm. So the building.
The building, yes. So we have a lot of people sitting on land in the city. And they're not doing anything with it, and they're not paying really any taxes on it. So there's no incentive for them to clean it up and to develop it. But when we readjust that, we'll have more in the land and less in the building. And so that will increase our taxes, but the regular homeowner won't have an increase in taxes. They'll just have a realignment of how their taxes are assessed.
So who's sitting on this land?
Well, we have people who see opportunity in neighborhoods. So, you know, taking bets on what the next big boom is going to be in Philadelphia. And so they're just sitting on these lots and they're filling up with trash. And it's dangerous for people in our community. So we can't give people incentive to do that anymore. Also, the city is sitting on so much land. You know, we have the land bank. We haven't really been able to get it off the ground. We have so much land that the city owns that could be land that's making money for the city.
The land bank is operational, or certainly the beginnings of being operational to address that very specific thing. Would you change the land bank, or would you just put it on a faster track? What would you do about that?
I'd put it on a faster track. I'd simplify how land gets transferred into the land bank. I think right now it's something like 5 different approvals have to happen for something to get transferred in. So I'd look to simplify that process. And I'd look to have, you know, some of the pieces that have parcels that have been held that are not getting transferred, incentive for it to get transferred in. Because if we don't do that, you know, the land bank's going to be a great idea that didn't deliver any results for the city.
Let me ask you a couple of questions about schools, and then we'll get to some callers who have joined our conversation. Do you support the School Reform Commission?
Well, I think the School Reform Commission has created an opportunity for both the state and the city to point fingers at each other. You know, when there's two groups that are responsible for something, it's easy for them to say, oh, well, it's the state's problem. We need to wait for the state to do this. Or, oh, it's the city's problem. They're not doing what they should be doing. And so diluted accountability doesn't lead to results.
I mean, it's as a result of a state takeover of the schools.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But the city still, you know, has responsibility to educate our kids.
Yes.
You know, that is one of our key responsibilities as a city, to educate our kids. And so we can't sit here in Philadelphia and say we have to wait for Harrisburg, because that is not fair to our kids. We are basically, you know, going against their constitutional rights by waiting and saying, you know, it's out of our hands.
But is that an argument to dismantle the School Reform Commission? Are you saying that?
Well, the voters said they wanted us to start to look at that. Now, whether the mayor can actually do that or not, you know, it's the state's decision. I think the city should be restored full accountability for the schools, because until we're restored full accountability for the schools, we'll be able to blame somebody else. So as mayor, whether the School Reform Commission is there or not, I want to take on full responsibility and accountability for the schools, working with the School Reform Commission, if they're still in place, and working with the superintendent, but not shirking the responsibility and saying, oh, there's nothing I can do about it.
You talk about waiting for Harrisburg. School districts across the state are waiting for Harrisburg and the governor to come up with a budget. School districts, including this one, are taking out loans in order to pave costs until there's some kind of agreement on a budget. As a mayor, what can a mayor do about something like that?
I mean, what's happening right now is devastating. And it's going to come back and hurt the taxpayers even more, because schools and nonprofits and jurisdictions are having to take out loans. And those loans are getting interest. And so it's going to end up costing us more. So I think that's an example of what I mentioned before on how not to work together, right?
But the city gets so much money from the state. I mean, they have to work together on this particular issue.
Oh, no. I was saying how not to work together when you were saying about the mayor versus city council, right? We can't, as the mayor, as the governor, you can't puff up your chest and say, this is the way it has to be. It's my way or the highway. Right. We see what happens in that. That is a great lesson learned for whomever the next mayor is on how to work with city council so that we can get things done.
A couple more questions about schools, and we do have some callers. What do you think about Superintendent Height?
I think Superintendent Height has great ideas. I think if you look into his action plan 3.0, it has some really good things that if we were actually to do them, the school, I think, would be a lot better. But we haven't been able to give him the resources needed. And I think the new approach of the school district being much more open with city council on how it's spending its money is going to lead to great things. And there are efficiencies that can be taken between the city and the school so that, you know, we can reduce costs and have things operating more efficiently. So there's for sure things that we can do. But when you look at the plan and the ideas that he's put forth, they are very innovative ideas. And if we're going to turn things around, we need to think about things differently. And he's getting a lot of pushback from that. But, you know, we can't do the things the way we've always done them and expect different results.
Do you think charters have been good for Philadelphia?
I think the Renaissance Charter program has been very good for Philadelphia. When you look at the Renaissance Charter schools, almost every one of them have seen increase in the amount of kids that are reading at grade level, which is one of the key indicators on whether they're going to be successful. So I think we should continue that program. I think we should work with the parents a little bit more closely so they're not blindsided by the schools that are chosen into the program. But I don't think we should let that take away from the success, because we now have more kids who are in schools that are allowing them to be educated in the way they need to be educated.
I mean, it sounds like you think it's been a good thing for the district and good thing for schools. But there are plenty of other schools, including some charters, where children are not doing so well. What do you do about that so that all children get some kind of a quality education?
Yeah, I think any school that's not working needs to be addressed quickly, whether that is a public school or a charter school. You know, just because you're a charter school does not mean that you're exempt from that. So no parent should be told that they have to send their kid to a school that is subpar, or they should wait for us to figure out how to make it better for them.
Would you send your child? You have a toddler, I guess an old toddler, almost a school-age child. Would you send her to a Philadelphia public school?
Yes, she is going to go to McCall Elementary School in the fall of next year.
And you've also, I read a quote that you want all third graders reading at grade level. If mayor, that would be a very important goal for you. How, as a mayor, could you make that happen? To make sure that all third graders are reading on grade level.
Yeah, so there are many things we can do as mayor to support the school district in that effort. There are many nonprofits who are working with that, and I really plan to partner with Dr. Height. I've spent some time with him, and I think that our approach would be very similar, and work with him on making sure that this is one of the metrics that we're measuring, because if we don't have kids reading by third grade, they are not going to go on to be successful. So some of the things the mayor could do, the mayor could work with the the free library and the schools. And how do we get some of those librarians to be in the schools in the mornings to be helping with reading? Also things like, how do you have programs for the fifth graders that are in the school to come and work with the kindergartners to have more hands on the ground, more individualized opportunity for kids? You know, we need to focus on outcomes, and until we focus on outcomes that are going to make a difference, we're going to continue to struggle in our school system.
And that's Melissa Murray Bailey. She is the Republican candidate for mayor of Philadelphia. You can join the conversation. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get some callers in. We have, looks like, Phil from East Kensington joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Phil. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. I heard you guys touch on the land bank earlier. I also kind of wanted to bring up the derelict properties and absentee landlords. It's kind of a big issue in my neighborhood and surrounding neighborhoods. And instead of raising our property taxes, I kind of want to wonder what you would do about how you're going to collect those taxes from the people that don't live in the neighborhood that have had these properties that have been decaying for years, sometimes even decades, and it's a blight in the neighborhood.
Sure.
And I was wondering what you do about that.
Phil, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. A question about what do you or does any mayor do about the number of derelict properties in the city?
Yeah, Phil, thanks so much for your question. And just a clarification, my plan is not to be raising taxes on the property owners who are paying the taxes. But as we look at the blight, especially in your neighborhood, you might know Chris Sawyer, who is running for sheriff. He's been doing a lot to really combat blight and to bring it to the level of attention that it deserves, which I'm very supportive of, because the vacant properties in neighborhoods are one of the reasons that those neighborhoods have seen so much decline in recent years. You know, I was in a neighborhood and over 50% of the houses were actually boarded up. So we need to be aggressive and partner with the collections department so that we're able, or sorry, the people who are doing the collections, to be more, have more resources to collect. We have, you know, it's a one-time a one-time surge, but we have over $500 million in uncollected taxes. Now, some of that is uncollectible, but a vast majority of it, we haven't tried enough to collect it. So I'd be looking at some of the things that other cities are doing with lien sales to get more aggressive, getting those properties either up to date on their taxes or turned over to someone who's going to invest in bringing them back up to the standard of the neighborhood. And that's the benefit of what I was sharing with you on how I was thinking about taxes differently. If we have more of it in the land, then it won't be a disincentive for people to make their property nice. Right now, they know if they improve the property, their taxes are going to go up significantly. So there's no reason to do that. If we have more of it in the land, then people will have incentive to upkeep their properties and therefore make the rest of the neighborhood nicer.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. An email from David says she claims that 1 year of talking with Philadelphia's civic arts, welfare and other organizations, and says that they have great ideas. And David wants you to name one of those great ideas. You had mentioned this earlier, that a sense, kind of a listening tour, sounds like.
Yes, yes.
So what's a great idea that you have heard?
Well, what I love is I was in a community, and the communities that have really robust town watch systems and programs. You know, I was just in Burholm a couple of weeks ago, and they were recognizing the original members of their town watch. And their town watch came together 20 years ago because there was a murder in their neighborhood. And that was the first time the crime in the city had really come into their neighborhood. So they got together, the community members, and they worked with their police district to come together to police the neighborhood together. And that's really, really important. I've seen the neighborhoods who are doing that have much better relationships with the police officers that serve that community. And also, they're able to have a safer environment.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Melissa Murray Bailey. She is running for mayor of Philadelphia. She is the Republican candidate. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Many more callers, many more emails as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and if you're just joining us, Melissa Murray Bailey is our guest. She is the Republican candidate for mayor of Philadelphia, and we have been doing one-on-one interviews with all the candidates. She's our fourth guest. We have Jim Kinney, who'll be joining us on Monday, and we have previously talked to all the other candidates as well. She's a 36-year-old. She moved to the city a couple of years ago in 2012, and she's an executive for the Swedish company called Universum. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Emails, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Patrick. Says, I'm a lifelong Democrat and a new Philadelphian, and the idea of voting Republican seems difficult, mostly because nationally, Republicans are very much associated with social conservatism, anti-abortion, anti-LGBT. Are these social issues one that you would support on a local level?
Well, I think that, you know, as a Democrat new to the city, you probably are seeing some of the same things that I saw when I came into the city, and knowing that it doesn't have to be this way and there's things that we can do to make it better. And if you grew up a Democrat like myself, you know, you probably don't know that you can vote Republican and still care about people and still, you know, be a good person. You know, my mom is still
pro-LGBT, for instance.
And be pro-LGBT, yes. You might have seen when the Supreme Court made their ruling, I was in support of that. I'm very much supportive of equal opportunity and for, you know, any type of person to have the life that that any of us have within Philadelphia. And if you actually look at the Republicans running in the city, you know, we have a much more diverse slate of candidates. One of our candidates is openly gay, which we don't see on the Democratic side. We have women, we have men, we have African-Americans, Asians, old, young. You know, the Republican Party in the city is one of a big tent. You know, we're very accepting of all different types of ideas, but with the focus of making sure that the city is a viable place for everyone to be successful and being very respectful of the hard-earned money that people are struggling to earn in our city.
Let me get Jim from Chestnut Hill to join our conversation. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for having me on the air.
Sure.
Melissa, I was wondering if you could concisely differentiate your points of view and your policies from Jim Kenney on three issues, schools, taxes, and crime.
Fair enough. Jim, we touched a little bit on schools, and we've touched a little bit on taxes. Let's take crime.
Yeah.
And Philadelphia has, certainly in pockets of the city, a troubling crime rate.
Yeah, so the differentiation is something really important for people to hear. The issues aren't differentiated, right? The problems we have in the city are obvious, they're persistent, they're chronic. But how we think about solving them is very different. And that comes from a difference of legislative experience versus executive experience. And so as you hear some of the things I'm talking about, or as you follow my campaign, you'll see everything I talk about is outcomes-based versus input-based. So whereas, you know, Jim Kenney might say success is we're having this program, I will say that success is based on the number of kids reading by third grade, the number of kids who have a job when they're leaving high school. These are things that are going – that are differentiated for me. And then when we talk about, so there are the two outcomes for schools that are differentiated. When we talk about crime, the things that we're talking about with crime are the biggest difference is I want us to invest in more police officers in the city. Commissioner Ramsey has a lot of great initiatives, but he hasn't been able to put all of them into action because of resource limitations. So I have said that we should increase the amount of police officers we have in the city by 500 so that we can really get police officers engaged in the community at a whole new level. The ones that I've talked to, they're trying to do it, but they are just so strapped for time. So if we have more people and we're able to get them into the communities, walking around, getting to know people, we're really going to be able to realize the vision of community policing. Right now, we're starting to get a taste of it, but we're not able to truly do it. And until we do that, we're not going to be able to have preventative measures that are happening, because what's happening in our communities are not things that are coming up out of nowhere. They're percolating under the surface. And when we have police officers who are able to engage with members of the community on a more regular basis, they're going to know that those things are happening.
How do you pay for 500 more police officers in this city?
Yeah,
where do you get the money?
It would be about, you know, approximately back of the napkin, about $45 million. You know that Mr. Kenney introduced a bill that is giving $62 million in bonus payments to our retirees. Right? So there is money out there that we can be using. And there's also efficiencies within City Hall that could easily get triple that amount that we need in order for the police officers.
What's one of those efficiencies?
Paperless government. And the good news is it's not even something that I need to get passed through City Council, because City Council has already passed that. They're already on board with it. And if we are to go to that paperless government, digital government, that would save $250 million a year.
$250 million a year? How is that possible?
They were the estimates that were run when Councilman Green introduced the bill. When you just think about the amount of paper that's wasted, the amount of duplication of efforts because the different departments can't talk to each other. So just to highlight for you how much waste we have in this particular area, when you go to turn in your paperwork to run for office in the city, you turn in your paperwork into the office. They say, thank you so much. Congratulations. They go and they photocopy it. They give it back to you. And they say, could you please walk it down 3 doors and file it here as well? Right? That is just a very small window into the duplication that needs to happen because the different departments aren't able to talk to each other in a modern way.
Let me ask you another question about crime, then we'll get back to our callers. What do you do about the numbers of gun-related crimes in the city? And do you think Philadelphia needs its own gun laws to deal with the very specific problems in this town?
Yeah. So first, I want to bring back regular gun buybacks because when you look at gun buybacks, guns are being turned in. And our number one priority needs to get illegal guns off the street. The second thing
is— Do you think criminals turn in their guns?
I do. Because a lot of the crimes in Philadelphia are crimes of desperation. They are people who are in deep poverty, who have gotten into selling drugs because it's the only job that they can find, or they are, and that's really where a lot of the illegal guns are coming into play. So if we're providing opportunity that is legal, that is providing, you know, family-sustaining wages, then people aren't going to have to turn to drugs as often. And, you know, therefore the violence, and they're not going to need their guns. And so if they're looking to pay their rent and they can do that by turning in their gun, you know, we see guns, any gun off the street that is illegal, whether that is one or whether that is 100, I will even take that one. And then the second thing is we need to make sure that we are enforcing the gun laws that we have in the city. You know, our state representative, John Taylor, had a bill that was passed that made sure that anyone who was caught with an illegal gun had a minimum sentence. Yet, when they're going into our court systems, those illegal weapons charges are getting dismissed. And people are back on the street with their illegal guns. You know, we have to enforce the laws we have. They are there and they can protect people. We cannot be dismissing those charges.
Let me get, looks like Raphael from Graduate Hospital area. Raphael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
I want to say, first of all, I'm a registered Democrat in Philadelphia. I'm relatively new to the city, you know, millennial, just bought a house. And my question is how in a city where that is so largely dominated by Democrats, where the city council in particular is so dominated by Democrats, how as a Republican mayor will you be able to reach across the aisle and work with them? And will they be responsive to you? What kind of relationships do you have with the council, especially in a city where, you know, I love that what you had said about the land value tax. I think that's an amazing idea. But in a city where, you know, the councilmen enjoy councilmanic privilege with in terms of zoning and things like that, how are you going to reach across the aisle and deal with these issues?
Raphael, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Raphael, and congratulations on your new house. That's an exciting step. When you think about, you know, a Republican in a city that is mostly Democrat, I think we first need to ask ourselves, you know, do we like the statistics that I shared? And if we like them, then, you know, there's no need to do something different. But I think there are a lot of people who don't like that and they want to do better for their city and the people in the city. And so then I think we need to look at a different approach. And we talked a little bit about, you know, how do you engage people along the way? And the first thing that I will do when elected is to sit down with every city council member. And the thing that we're also, you know, not talking about as much is Philadelphia's relationship with Harrisburg. And Harrisburg is the opposite of Philadelphia, where we have a mostly Republican state legislature. And we have a not great relationship with Harrisburg. So I'm really looking forward to being able to start to build that bridge back to Harrisburg to regain the trust so that we don't have this contentious relationship where they feel like they're giving us resources. They feel like we're squandering them, and they don't trust us. My approach of accountability and transparency will help to build that bridge back to Harrisburg and improve the relations and therefore get Philadelphia the resources that we need.
And that's Melissa Murray Bailey. She is running for mayor of Philadelphia as a Republican, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. You want to end Philadelphia's status as a sanctuary city. Why?
Because it's against the law for federal government, first of all. And I think we have to have law and order. There are a lot of sanctuary cities, and if we don't like what the federal government is mandating, it is much more effective to come together and to lobby for that to change, not to say, no way, we're not doing that here. And also, it's about protecting the people of Philadelphia. You know, what people get confused about with sanctuary city, it's not about immigration or illegal immigration. What it's about is illegal immigrants who are committing crimes. Anyone who commits crimes in Philadelphia, we need to make sure that we are handling so that we're protecting the people of Philadelphia. And so anything I can do to protect the people of Philadelphia, I'm going to do.
Are there illegal immigrants who have committed crimes in Philadelphia who have not been charged that you know of? That have not been charged for that crime that they've committed?
I'm not sure the question you're asking me.
Well, if and I understand that sanctuary cities are controversial. And there's a question about a case, a horrible case out in San Francisco where a woman was murdered and all sorts of terrible things had happened to her. And it looked like the person who did it had been known to authorities. He was an illegal immigrant. That is a sanctuary city as well. I'm just wondering, in Philadelphia, is there a similar case of someone who committed a horrendous crime, who was here in the city illegally, who has not been charged with that crime?
I don't think we should wait for that to happen to the people.
But do you think that would happen in Philadelphia? If someone committed a crime, they wouldn't be charged with it? A violent crime?
No, that's not what happened in San Francisco. What happened in San Francisco was they were charged multiple times with crimes and deported and came back and charged with another crime and let go. Right. And then that happened. And oh, my gosh, I don't want that to happen in Philadelphia. But if we do the same thing that San Francisco, then it's just a matter of time before something happens. You know, it's the same thing that I was saying with the gun laws. If we release people who have illegal weapons and they go back on the street, they're going to end up killing someone. And we have many examples where that's happened. So first and foremost, I want to make sure that we're, you know, protecting people in Philadelphia from people who can hurt them.
We're almost out of time here. We have a website comment from Sarah, wants to know where you stand on the energy hub. And I know you have some position on the energy hub.
Yes, I'm a big proponent of the energy hub. Actually, my thesis.
And you're not alone in that, I should add.
My thesis in college was all about things that lead to the energy hub. It is a great opportunity for the future of Philadelphia. And if we don't jump on that opportunity, another city is going to. And we're going to be stuck looking for our identity for this century. You know, we can continue to look back at what we were, or we could look forward at what we can be. And bringing that energy, the liquid natural gas, to Philadelphia could allow us to create manufacturing plants again here. Manufacturing plants not of the past, but of the future. And that could bring tens of thousands of jobs to the people of Philadelphia.
And it also could bring tens of thousands of train cars through the city. There is concern about safety and about pollution as well.
Yeah, there is. And what PGW has been doing with the plant that they have to convert the gas that they're getting through their pipelines to liquid natural gas, if they were able to build another plant, they'd be continuing to get it through the pipeline, which would protect Philadelphia from more trains. And then there's also, you know, a long-term plan of building a pipeline, which is a little bit more contentious of an idea. But my thought for the energy hub is not that we are moving energy out of Philadelphia, the liquid natural gas. I want to keep it in Philadelphia so that we can take advantage of all the things that come with having it.
Well, Melissa Murray Bailey, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Good luck as well. And she's Republican candidate for mayor of Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. Send us an email. Send us a Facebook comment. Download the podcast of the show. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us.